Welcome to Alabama Short Stories, when you're a little behind on your Alabama history. I'm your host, Sean Wright. The Birmingham Area Council of the Boy Scouts of America opened Camp Sequoia in 1972. Just south of Anniston in East Alabama, Sequoia is on the east side of the state's largest mountain, Cheehaw. I spent my first week at Camp Sequoia as an 11-year-old in 1974. I loved camping in the tents, cooking our food, and working on merit badges. A highlight was swimming the mile swim in the 86-acre Lake Cross. I remember one summer, we sang songs as we followed the lead rowboat around the lake. I can't imagine doing that now, and I'm sure I would be walking on the bottom of the lake if I attempted the mile swim today. Lake Cross was created when a stopper was built on Carr Creek. You could call it a dam, but there's no cussing at Camp Sequoia, so it's called a stopper. I spent the next 4 or 5 summers going to camp there, and I never imagined I would go back until I went with my son when he was a scout. Between summer camp with the troop and other events held at Camp Sequoia, I've been there quite a few times in the past 15 years. The camp is just a part of the 1,447-acre Frank Spain Scout Reservation, which I visited very little of. I was surprised that the camp and surrounding counties were part of the Alabama Gold Rush in the 1800s. If I'd known about that when I was 11, I might have been panning for gold instead of working on merit badges. Now, mining is nothing new in Alabama. Mining for coal and iron ore are the two most apparent, and most times had to go underground to extract. There's also quarry mining for limestone marble and a big business in crushed stone, sand, and gravel for construction. In 1782, future President Thomas Jefferson publicized that he discovered a gold-bearing rock on the north side of the Rappahannock River. Not much gold was found in Virginia, but the first true gold rush happened in 1799 when a farm boy in Carabas County, North Carolina, found a 17-pound gold nugget. North Carolina would eventually become the largest gold producer in the East, followed by Georgia. Now, the first gold rush in Georgia and second in the United States was in Dahlonega in 1828. Anyone with their southern bona fides would already know that, because they've been to Six Flags Over Georgia and had ridden the Dahlonega mine train. This roller coaster sent you careening along a track in search of gold nuggets, much the same way the miners did in 1828. The Dahlonega gold rush was smack dab in the middle of the Cherokee Indian Nation. Prospectors illegally flooded the area, and when Georgia Governor Gilmer realized it would be too hard to remove the intruders, he annexed the Cherokee land instead. White settlers had been taking Indian land since they landed on North America's shores. Georgia, an original colony, and its citizens had pushed the Indian nations to the west and had the Cherokee Nation in the mountains of North Georgia and the Creek Nation across the border in the Mississippi Territory, what we now know as Alabama. And when prospectors followed the trail of gold from North Carolina into Georgia and then into Alabama, the Cherokee and Creek Nations just got in their way. In 1813, as part of the larger War of 1812, the Creek War started between Lower Creeks supporting the U.S. and the Upper Creeks, also known as the Red Sticks, who supported Britain and Spain. An oversimplification of this would be that the Red Sticks wanted to keep their land, and the Lower Creek wanted to continue trading with the U.S. and had already adopted some of their cultural practices. They took sides against each other. In 1814, General Andrew Jackson's forces defeated the Red Sticks at the Battle of Horseshoe Bend, outside of present-day Dadeville, Alabama. At the Treaty of Fort Jackson, Andrew Jackson forced the Upper and Lower Creeks to cede over 21 million acres of creek land to the U.S., even though the Lower Creek helped him defeat the Red Sticks. Anyone who's read anything about Andrew Jackson will not be surprised. 5 years later, in 1819, the state of Alabama was carved out of the eastern part of the Mississippi Territory. This land included what was left of the Creek Nation in eastern Alabama. Now, the theme of Alabama Short Stories is that I gloss over a considerable amount of history just to get to the point of my original story. But we need to talk a little more about the Creeks and the Cherokee Nations. It's 1828 and gold is discovered in Dahlonega. This town of 100 people or so would soon swell to over 10,000 people. The Cherokee Phoenix, an Indian's Advocate, was a weekly newspaper printed by the nation during that time. One writer reported, "Our neighbors who regard no law and pay no respects to the laws of humanity are now reaping a plentiful harvest. We are an abused people." I'm sure you've all heard about the Indian Removal Act of 1830. This act resulted in the Trail of Tears, where Indians were rounded up and forced to march to Oklahoma. In Season 2, I told the story of Tom Hendricks and the wall he built, the Wachapi Commemorative Stone Wall, in honor of his great-great-grandmother who had been forcibly removed from her land and marched west on the Trail of Tears. You might not have heard that the Cherokees in North Georgia and the Creeks in East Alabama were sitting on prime gold land. The Cherokee Nation was the last Indian nation to be removed, and the Dahlonega Gold Rush brought it on. Another smaller gold rush in Georgia happened in the town of Villarica in West Georgia. And if you draw a line on a map from Dahlonega through Villarica, it takes you to the Alabama Gold Belt. Now, the Alabama Gold Belt is made up of 9 Alabama counties: Claiborne, Coosa, Chambers, Clay, Chilton, Elmore, Randolph, Talladega, and Tallapoosa. Now, looking at them on a map, you will see they make up where the Creek Nation was. And to better visualize where the Gold Belt is, it's roughly south of I-20, east of I-65, and north of I-85. Gold was first discovered in Alabama in 1830 in what is now known as Goldville. The town of Goldville was founded in 1842, and at its peak was home to approximately 3,500 people. Most were probably miners, and many lived in tents. But there were stores, a hotel, a racetrack, a school, and a Masonic lodge. The peak of gold mining in Alabama was in the 1840s, and to keep things organized, the Gold Belt was divided into 12 districts. The districts were named Arabacuchi, Pinetucky, Chulafani, Riddle's Mill, Idaho, Cragford, the Devil's Backbone, Eagle Creek, Goldville, Hog Mountain, Chilton County, and Coosa County. The mines I mentioned earlier at Camp Sequoia are in the Chulafani District. The Striplin mines on the property consisted of a couple of vertical shafts, one lined with logs. There are some horizontal excavations as well. And the Carr Creek placer was located nearby in Carr Creek, which now feeds Lake Cross. Mining from gold was performed in several different ways. At this location, miners would use pickaxes to dig, looking for a gold seam. Now, a placer is where you use water, such as panning for gold in a stream. Places were also created on a large industrial scale using large screens to separate the gold from the rock and mud. In any case, you needed water to extract the gold. Not far from the Chulafani town that sprung up in the area was the Arabacuchi community, which was thought to have grown to 5,000 people. Out of all the gold districts in Alabama, 2 accounted for half the production of gold in Alabama: Arabacuchi and Hog Mountain. Of the 50,000 ounces of gold produced in Alabama, 24,300 ounces came from Hog Mountain. All this excitement about gold in Alabama was about to come to an abrupt end. In 1848, 2 years from becoming a state, California's military governor, Colonel Richard Mason, visited the gold fields and reported his findings to President Polk. This report prompted the president to announce the gold strike in his State of the Union address to Congress on December 5, 1848. This announcement prompted a mass exodus of Alabama gold miners and others to leave for California. These 49ers had the skills necessary to succeed in California. Alabama's gold rush was over. Towns that had sprung up overnight became smaller and smaller. Goldville, which had 3,500 during the peak of the gold rush, had 47 residents in the 2020 census. Mining continued intermittently at Hog Mountain until 1938, when the equipment was dismantled and shipped to Georgia. 175 years later, most Alabama residents don't know about this part of their history, but now you do, and all it takes to strike it rich is a pan and some water. I'm sure you will make it as rich as I do producing this podcast. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Alabama Short Stories Podcast. I'm happy to announce that Volume 2 of the Alabama Short Stories book is now available and features stories from Seasons 4 through 6. You can purchase it and Volume 1 online at Amazon.com and other online retailers. If you'd like to support your local bookstore, you can purchase it through bookshop.org, where your purchases will help financially support independent bookstores. You can find links in the show notes and on the website. See you next time at Alabama Short Stories.